Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Emma Gunn Show. I am your host, Emma Gunn Wardner, and I'm joined in this episode by Elizabeth Hurley in her role as the face and ambassador for the breast cancer campaign, which you may be familiar with if you know that every October, I think, as I'm sure many of you do, I think pink. I think of the pink ribbon, which I proudly wear with pride. Now, this campaign honours the life and legacy of Evelyn Lauder. She was the co-creator of the Pink Ribbon and champion of the breast cancer movement. And it celebrates a landmark birthday. It's 25 years old this year. And a lot has changed. It was started because women were being affected by breast cancer, but nobody was talking about it. And the campaign has raised a huge amount of awareness, has created a very open dialogue and discussion about the disease. And quite fittingly, this year, what used to be breast cancer awareness has now changed ever so slightly to the breast cancer campaign. And the reason for that is because that dialogue is so wide now that it's active in 70 countries around the world and has raised more than $70 million to support the global research, education, medical services, and also to fund the medical research grants through the Breast Cancer Research Foundation, which was set up again by Evelyn Lauder shortly after establishing the Pink Ribbon Breast Cancer Awareness Campaign. It's a conversation we need to have. It's a subject that's very close to my heart. Just being really honest about it, it's a subject that terrifies me. I'm scared of it. It has occurred in my family. Therefore, my instinct, unfortunately, is to run away and hide from it because I find tackling it head on quite terrifying. But that's exactly what this campaign is designed to counter. We shouldn't be scared of it. We should be talking about it. We should be sharing our experiences. We should be vigilant. We should be checking ourselves regularly and informing ourselves. And actually, Estée Lauder and the Breast Cancer Campaign are an excellent resource for this because they can give you all the information you need in order to be more knowledgeable, and knowledge is power. And in the last 20 years in the campaign's life, mortality rates from breast cancer have decreased by 38%. And actually, Elizabeth has got some more statistics that she can share during the episode. There are global efforts, and I'm sure you will know that if you go to any Estée Lauder counter in the month of October, you will see pink ribbons that you can pin to your lapel. I always do, I urge you to do the same. But you can also buy lots of products, the proceeds to which will go to fund that all-important research. As a beauty editor, it's something I've been close to in the sense that every October I would turn my pages pink and I would list and share details of all of the products that benefited these incredible causes. I'm very happy to turn over this podcast to the campaign this year. I caught up with Elizabeth at Estée Lauder HQ. We're celebrating 25 years of this incredible campaign. She's the face and ambassador of the campaign, and it's just it's a really important subject, and she speaks so eloquently on it. I was very honoured, as I am every year, to be invited to an illumination every year. A landmark is lit pink. I have seen the Eden Project go pink. I have seen Nelson's Column go pink. many landmarks around the world, and it's a symbol of this incredible campaign. And Elizabeth was there, as she always is, to share some of the details, some of the advancements in research, and it is something that we cover in quite some detail in the show. Now, I will be putting links to all of the pink products, as I like to call them, that you can browse. I think already the breast cancer campaign box, a special edition box, may have already sold out, but there are still products available, and those pink ribbons are still available on counter. But the most important thing is to keep this conversation going. 25 years ago, no one was talking about it. People were dying. 25 years later, people are talking about it all around the world, and mortality rates from breast cancer are going down. If you're a regular listener to the show, you'll know that there are certain topics that I like to cover with all of my guests, and Elizabeth is no different. We talk about life, love, family, and the importance of saying no actually came up a lot. She also shared with me a rather excellent tip that a certain Dame Joan Collins had shared with her, a beauty tip, in fact. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Please do visit the links in the show notes. They are on iTunes and they are at emmagurnawardner.com, or the far easier to type into your browser, emmagurns.com. But there are some excellent resources, not least a documentary that the BCC has commissioned, which is The Unravelling of the Pink Ribbon, which is creating a breast cancer-free world, which highlights the campaign and its progress. I'm not going to dilly-dally anymore. I think the most important thing is to speak to Elizabeth. So I hope you enjoy this episode of the show. As ever, if you want to get in touch with me, please do email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com or head over to emmagurns.com and click the little envelope, write a message, and that message will come straight to me personally into my inbox. And please do share your thoughts about the show on Twitter and Instagram. My handle is at emmagurns, at E-M-M-A-G-U-N-S. So here it is, a special episode of The Emma Gunn Show featuring Elizabeth Hurley. But we're actually here chatting to you today because it is the 25th anniversary of the Breast Cancer Awareness Campaign. You have been working with BCA now for how many years?
22. Wow. This is my 22nd year of being the ambassador for the campaign. And it's been an astonishing journey. It really has. When I joined the campaign, when Evelyn Lauder, who was Estée Lauder's daughter-in-law, when I first joined the Estée Lauder companies in 1995, she told me that she just started a new campaign. Mm. And she said, "Will I help?" And I said, "Of course, in any way I can." And she explained to me what it was. And as soon as she told me that she'd been really inspired by the AIDS activists that were very active at that time, they'd created a red ribbon for AIDS. They were very vocal. They were brilliant at what they did. And she said, "I'm just looking around and women are dying of breast cancer everywhere and nobody's talking about it. I'm setting out to change it." And back then, I hadn't heard of the pink ribbon at that time. She'd only invented it 2 years earlier. The word hadn't really spread so much then. They just had a handful of research scientists working for them, not like the 250 they have today. And it was just a completely different time, so different. And over the 22 years, we've just seen so much change in attitudes towards breast cancer. The fact that we're sitting here talking for your podcast about breast cancer, the fact that I've been on television all day talking about breast cancer, the fact that all over the world, beautiful global buildings are being illuminated for breast cancer. We've just come a long way. And that's just the awareness side. The medical side too has come on in such enormous strides since I started talking about breast cancer. That is a great movement to have been part of, and we now need to keep the conversation going until there is no more breast cancer, until the research scientists have found the final clue.
Well, I was trying to think about the obvious question is, what progress have you seen? You can put your sunglasses on. Sorry, listeners, it's very bright in this room.
And these are prescriptions, so I can now see you too. Tell me, if it's too annoying, tell me not to.
Sorry if that's horrible. No, it's fabulous. I was thinking about the obvious question is, what progress have you seen? But from my perspective, the listeners know that I am a beauty editor. I've been to the events that you've given your talks, and they've been very impassioned and very detailed. And I wondered whether the fact that every year the stats that you quote change quite dramatically.
Yep.
And last night was a great example of something like one of the stats changed from up to 90% in terms of survival of stage one. And that must be, is that a way that you measure like the involvement and the success of the campaign?
It is. The mortality rates from breast cancer have reduced by 38% since the late 80s. Many women, more women are surviving their cancers. Mm. Funnily enough, more cancers are being detected, but that could well be also because of the campaign, because they're being found earlier. Mm. And of course, when tumours are found earlier, they're much more treatable. There's a 90% survival rate amongst women who are diagnosed early mm-hmm. with breast cancer, which you know always brings me back to my grandmother's story, mm-hmm. who when she was finally diagnosed, having found her lump and not told anybody for a year, when she was finally diagnosed, I couldn't tell you what stage her tumour was at because we didn't have the conversation, because we didn't talk about it. I think if a close friend of ours today was diagnosed, we'd know everything about it. I was talking to a very nice lady today who's a survivor who had breast cancer a few years ago. And I said, how much information were you given about your particular breast cancer? She said, I was told everything. I knew which strain it was. I knew which chemicals they were treating it, how they were treating it. She said, I was involved in every step. And I said, is that just because you were you? Because she was in the media. Mm. And she said, no, absolutely not. She said, everybody I've spoken to, there's a great deal of information that's imparted to women now when they're diagnosed. It didn't happen. My grandmother knew nothing. She knew nothing before and she knew nothing at the end. All she knew is that she was dying. Terrible time. Terrible time. So I don't know what stage her tumour was when it was finally diagnosed and treated. Tumours. She had a double mastectomy. But I know that if when she'd first found a lump, well, perhaps, I don't know how long it had been there. None of us know anything. But if she'd been, you know, if she'd learned to check her breasts every month and if she had done from a young age, like we've been encouraging women to do for 25 years now, who knows what would have happened.
Yeah. It's sad, but also hopeful when you think about what you've been a huge part of, creating this awareness. We wear pink ribbons in October, and we're more, not just October, we're more vocal and we talk about it more the year round.
Well, very much so. I mean, I'm only a very small cog in the wheel. There are phenomenal people who've been part of this campaign, and obviously unbelievable research scientists that work for the foundation. I'm a tiny part of it. I'm a vocal part of it. Not only during, I mean, most of our activities are in October, but we fundraise throughout the year. And yes, it has, for me, it's been one of the most important parts of my working career to be able to have this. And I think the fact that I started off at Estee Lauder as a model, and at that time they only had one model, that was me, so I did everything. Now they have lots of spokes models who shoot different parts of, you know, fragrance, skincare. I did everything when I started. But the fact that running parallel to that was doing this for them too has really made my job so special. And I've seen what a brilliant company they are for people to work with. I've spent a lot of time with many of their employees who've been diagnosed with breast cancer. Knowing that 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer means that when you're working for a company that employs tens of thousands of women, there's going to be a lot. And survivors in the Estee Lauder company often join in on events with us, and it's fantastic to see them and talk to them. We gave a talk earlier today for about 200 employees, many of whom are survivors. It's great feeling.
I can imagine. Yeah. You once said, I have 3 lives, actress, model, producer, sometimes aware that there's a 4th life that's somewhat neglected, which is living a bit.
That was a long time ago. And of course, since then, I had my child, so I believe that was probably what, I didn't know it at the time, but that could well have been what was missing. And since having my child, you know, he's now 15 and a half, you know, my life changed completely when I had him. I didn't make a movie for 8 years. I stayed at home, so I continued to work for Estee Lauder, and I did other smaller jobs, but not ones that took me away for big chunks of time. It was the best thing I ever did. I loved it. I don't regret a second of it. But that was probably the living bit that I meant, which meant not living out of a suitcase and not just flying the whole time.
This is going to sound very... but you sort of hit the scene and it just escalated from there. There was no sort of small crescendo
Well, it's... Of course, 2 things on that. I was 29 by the time that happened. Mm. And looking back, I think I was incredibly lucky to have those years of relative anonymity, but working. So I started working when I was 21, so I'd had 8 years in the business where I'd worked a lot. I'd made a lot of movies, a lot of TV. I'd never had a modelling job before I got my Estee Lauder one. But I'd had time to grow out of the public eye. And sometimes, you know, I look at people who become very famous in their teens, and I think that's harder. Much, much, much harder.
Well, there's a theory, I'm sure you've heard it, that you stay at the age at which you became famous.
So I'm 29.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and some people are 14.
But child stars, then, that's tough.
I think it is tough. It's the same for sportsmen and women, actually, because, you know, they peak at, when do they peak? In their teens, in their late teens. And, you know, that I think, too, life can become a little unreal at times. So I see that, and I really appreciate that I had those years where I could learn my trade quietly. I could make mistakes with my clothes and hair and makeup quietly. Nobody saw, apart from my own photo album, which we can certainly have a laugh at that, but it's not in the public domain.
Yeah, lucky.
What
about business? Because you set up a business in these years as well.
I did. And it was a great time for that, because I wanted to do something that meant I could still do the school runs and make shepherd's pie and stuff at home, but I wanted to work, obviously. So I started up my own businesses at that time. I only kept going with one of them, which meant I could work around my son's waking hours. And yeah, it worked pretty well. The beachwear business, Elizabeth Hurley Beach, is what I've kept doing throughout the time, but I was an organic farmer. I had my own snack bars and beef jerky, all low calorie and quite delicious and organic, and they were great. Once I started working again, I realised I couldn't keep doing all that, but it was a really great time trying all those things.
Because you moved out, didn't you? You now live on a lot of land. You have a farm.
Yeah.
Was that like a big transition of saying, "Well, I'm having this life, and I can have this life, but actually, I want to really nurture and be outside and be in Wellingtons."
I needed to for a while. I really did. I mean, I was 36 when I had my son, and I felt that I just hadn't really stood still for a really long time. I didn't live at home. I lived out of a suitcase and in hotel rooms ever since I started working. And I didn't feel I had any roots. And I didn't want my son to have that as his reality. I didn't want him to think it was normal to never be at home and to not have any regular hours at all. So it was an important thing to do. I tried to do it in London, but it was difficult, because I didn't really have much privacy. So I did end up moving to Gloucestershire, where we lived very happily. Now I've moved even further out to Herefordshire. I still have a house in London, and I spend time in London, but my home is in the country.
And you mentioned shepherd's pie. Are you an author?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Awesome cook.
No. I'd like to put that record straight away. I'm not an awesome cook. I cook, but I'm like a mummy cook.
Right.
Roasts and, you know, soups, and not a chef at all. I can't make things look beautiful on the plate or anything like that. It's nutritious and wholesome, but I'm not a chef.
Right. Okay. I don't know about you, I love preparing like a big roast for my family.
I love doing roast too.
I find it quite therapeutic.
So do I.
And then I like nurturing my family. I like feeding them.
I like feeding people too.
Thinking that they're well.
Yeah, no, I love feeding people as well. I get all that. My father taught me how to make a roast. Well, I always say that my father, the best roast potatoes in the world, he said his mother. He said his mother, patch on his mother's roast potatoes. So everybody has roast potato competitions in my house. Annoyingly, my sister are better than mine.
Is there a secret to the perfect roast?
She uses goose fat. My father didn't.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She does. Yeah.
Delicious. It does make the difference.
Delicious, I know.
But then that's, you know, you can't overindulge.
Can't have them too often.
I always wear makeup, as I've never seen the point of looking less than your best.
Well, that's true. Mm-hmm. I was, in some ways, when, out of the blue, Estee Lauder wanted me to work for them, I was a good choice, because I had been obsessed with makeup for a very long time. Mm. So, and I think, you know, also representing a beauty brand has meant that I have a responsibility towards them to look relatively presentable at all times. So that, you know, that's probably aided and abetted me in, you know, attempting to keep it together. But also, I did start wearing makeup really young, actually. Mm. I had aunts that gave me eyeshadows. Lip gloss didn't really exist then. But eyeshadows and other makeup things, sort of around nine.
The transformative power when you're that little,
yeah,
and a bit of blush.
And I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. I was given a silver eyeshadow, which I loved. It was on a little sponge applicator. I got silver and my sister got moss green. This was the 70s. And we loved them. We just adored them. My father was furious. It didn't make any difference. We still use them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, I've always loved makeup.
And one of the things that I saw on your Instagram feed recently that really made me chuckle was, I think it was Actress Talk.
And me and Jane.
With you and
shot by my son.
I don't. And is Damien your cinematographer?
Well, well, have you noticed during term time there's less pictures? Well, you know what? He's got quite a good eye. Mm. He likes it. He enjoys it. He makes little movies of his own, which often I have to star in, little bits of fiction. But yeah, he does. He does reportage, and he loved. I mean, we did, obviously. He gave us our lines for that, as it happened. We weren't really saying that to each other. But he set it up, and yeah, he likes shooting that sort of thing a lot. And Joan's hysterical.
Honestly, it made me absolutely cry out with laughter, because you always know that I don't call her Joan. It feels inappropriate, like Dame Joan.
Dame Joan, to us.
Obviously. Has a wicked sense of humour.
She
so
does.
It's just, it must be incredible working with her.
I love working with Joan. We had some really good scenes together this season. She's fabulous. She's got unbelievable energy. It's funny because Evelyn Lauder, you know, who started this campaign, she'd probably be of similar-ish age to Joan. Both those ladies have twice as much energy as I've ever had. They are phenomenal. Evelyn was the most inspirational woman ever, and I'm inspired by Joan too. She's great.
Yeah, I mean, she's icon, idol. My Instagram feed is full of pictures of her.
Is it?
She's just incredible.
Yeah,
I love her.
She is. Have you ever interviewed her?
I want to, but equally I'm terrified.
You shouldn't be. She'd love to be interviewed.
I desperately want to chat to her, because I think she's
she knows a lot about beauty. She gave me one very good tip once. She said that in her car, in her house, in the downstairs loo, she always has a pot of eye cream. And every time she would visit that room and washes her hands.
Every time she was passing.
She passes that room. She always pats on a little bit more eye cream around here.
Oh.
On top of her makeup, just pats it on. And I started to do that when she told me that a few years ago. It's fantastic. It's fine to put creams on top of makeup. It's absolutely fine. And it's important because as you get older, your skin gets drier.
Mm.
So now I pat on eye cream maybe 4 or 5 times a day, just around here.
A little bit of A&R.
It's great. It's absolutely fantastic. She was right.
I love that.
Yeah, she's got lots of tips.
Beauty tips from Joan. And I wondered about your sense of humour and how you use it in times of when you're feeling crappy. You know the days. And whether that factors in.
Well, I like a laugh. Mm-hmm. It's true. All my best friends make me laugh. My son makes me laugh. My sister makes me laugh. Yeah, it's a little tough to be around humourless people. Mm. Yeah, I don't think I have too many of those in my life. I think English people use humour to deflect from a lot of situations.
Yes.
And it's a national characteristic. And it makes me laugh. I like it.
Mm.
It works for me.
How would you describe your sense of humour?
Immature.
Or how do... immature.
Yeah, silly and immature, I'm afraid.
Are you a practical joker?
Probably not. Not really. No, I think just pathetically silly. Yeah, all my friends are quite silly. I like silly.
Yes, silly's good.
Yeah, silly's good.
How does one keep on the path that they want to be on? Like, do you ever set goals? Do you think about the things that you want to do? If somebody offers you something and it doesn't feel right, are you confident enough to say, no, that isn't the thing for me, even if on paper it looks wonderful? How do you sort of navigate all of those things?
Well, it took me a long time to learn to say no, quickly. Like only really in the last few years. And I think it's important. I think working with this campaign, actually, and talking to so many women, have really made me realise that we need to value ourselves as women a bit more than we do, because, you know, we have to take care of ourselves in order to take care of anyone else. And so when I speak to these women who are going through the most traumatic times, going through their treatment, they've been taught to take a step back and stop worrying about anybody else and give themselves some time to heal, really. And in fact, what was very interesting, I was talking to one of our research scientists last night at this party, and she's talking about, this is still at lab level, it's not filtered down yet, but she was telling me about some experiments they're doing right now to do with cortisol in the body, which is one of the stress hormones that we release when we're in a panic. And they're doing such studies at the moment on how that affects cancer cells and how it can also affect the efficiency of chemotherapy on cells when cortisol is present. It's early days. We don't know when we'll hear the results of this, if we'll ever hear the results, but just hearing this amazing woman telling me these things, it just hammers home again that you have to look after yourselves. We have to find a way to de-stress and to relax. So I've learned to say no to things that I don't really want to do. I feel I ought to do them. And you have to say, I want to do what I'm doing well, and I'm going to say no to that. I want to go home this weekend and be with my family. I'm not going to fly to X to present Y. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to pack it all in like I used to when I was much younger. When I'd think nothing, I used to get Concorde to New York, shoot all day, get Concorde back, shoot all day here, go somewhere else. I mean, I never stayed at home. I wouldn't do that to myself now. I think, no, actually, I want to go to the country and I want to make some jam and I want to be there for my son. I want to chat to my mother. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to say no, not doing it. And I think perhaps women should think about learning to say that earlier and to really use their time to be what they really want to be, and to seize the day.
It's like we're talking about liking roast because we're feeding our families. There's an element of wanting to provide, but then the great expression, I'm sure you've heard it, is, as you see on the aeroplanes, put your own oxygen mask on before you help someone around you. But it does seem to be, and it's a recurring theme on this podcast, about how difficult it is and how actually to be able to stand up and say, I have to look after myself, and what might occur around you, people might perhaps not like that. It's a big statement, but it's a really positive one. To health.
It is, because we cannot be the caretakers if we don't take care of ourselves. That might only mean taking a 15-minute bath instead of a 3-minute shower. So you can actually... I mean, we're not talking about taking, 10 months off walking around the Sahara thinking about ourselves. No, we're just saying little times that you can just say, actually... I don't need to do that because I'm going to do this. It's important.
Yeah, it is about factoring it in, and it doesn't require being an Instagram meditator or an Instagram yoga bunny.
No.
And living a completely different lifestyle.
Yeah, it's about slowing down just a little bit sometimes.
What's your favourite way to slow down? Is it a bath?
Yeah, short-term relief, definitely a hot soak in the bath. I take one pretty much every day of my life. Sometimes I take two.
Really? Okay, I love a bath, but it dries my skin out. How do you just moisturise like bilio?
Jo Malone bath oil.
Oh.
In the bath. And yeah, I find that makes a huge difference, actually.
Really?
Jo Malone bath oil in the bath. And I'm not religious about anointing myself afterwards, but I try to a couple of times a week. Yeah, I do.
I'm now going to change the dialogue in my head when I'm putting on moisturiser and anoint myself. I love that.
Yeah, and you can add a little extra just almond oil to the bath too, which helps.
Speaking of which, I often ask my guests, what are their favourite books? Is there a book that you often recommend to people?
Well, to start, depends who they are and what they want to read. I think I probably do 2/3 fabulous reading, really good reading, almost all rereading, because I read a great deal in my youth and a great deal up until I had my son. So I reread them all because I read fast. So like I had a Jane Austen festival with myself last year. I reread most Graham Greene's last year. I'm about to have a Thomas Hardy revival in the Hurley household. So I do all that sort of rereading all the time because I probably have read almost all I wanted to read. Of course there'll be some people I haven't read. Mm. I'll have a Nabokov session, but I will also temper that with thrillers, which I love. So I love a thriller too. And I really like American thrillers. And they're quite nasty, some of them. I love Harlan Coben. I love Tess Gerritsen. So they're all urban street thrillers. I adore them. They're all quite nasty.
You get on very well with my
Nikki French, who actually a husband and wife team, English. I love those books. Mm. Me and my sister, we all fight over the new one of those that come out. And then we all go back and, you know, go back to...
Have you read any of the Mo Hayder novels?
No.
I will leave Mo Hayder. I will write this down and leave this with you, Elizabeth. The first book, it's...
English or American?
English.
Oh, sure.
I believe. But so good.
Modern.
Modern, thriller, terrifying, like a web of absolute... So yes, I will leave that.
Thank you.
That
okay,
with you.
Good. I shall pass it on to the other Hurley readers. We all share books. Okay.
The Hurley Book Club.
Yeah.
Excellent. Tell me a little bit more in terms of the campaign about what might be happening for the rest of the year and moving forward.
Well, I don't know if you noticed, but we changed the actual look of the pink ribbon this year.
Is it bolder?
It's tattered. Not that one, but the one in all the graphic images. Mm. It's a tattered, frayed ribbon this year because we felt that symbolised that it's gone through a lot of wear and tear over these 25 years. We've hammered home the message about awareness, and now we've always raised funds, but now we really are, people are aware in England and America, in most European countries, they know about the pink ribbon, they know about breast cancer now. So now we are moving on to a slightly different track where we are really, really, really focusing on fundraising to have more researchers working for us and to find a cure. So that's the direction from now on for us.
And you're still travelling a huge amount with this campaign, aren't you?
Of course, yeah, always.
And long may it continue.
Long may it continue, or not.
Well,
because
that's true.
We would like not to have to do it anymore, because there isn't any more breast cancer. Mm-hmm. It's happened with lots of diseases. They have found cures. You know, there's no cervical cancer in young ladies now, because they get vaccinated. You know, I mean, in my life, people were scared.
Mm.
Well, my generation, of course, will continue to be so because, of course, we weren't vaccinated. But for youngsters, my nieces, it's gone.
Mm.
Like polio.
Is that the energy that one has to bring to a project like this? Of just, it can't be a battle. It's got to be, this is the end goal. This is what we have to keep striving for.
I think so, yes. Mm. We don't want women to die of breast cancer.
Mm.
Even though there has been so much progress, people still do die. We hear of them every day.
Mm.
Not everyone makes it.
I remember reading an interview with Leonard Lauder, in fact, who said, whatever you want to achieve in life, figure out what that looks like. I'm paraphrasing, by the way, this is not as eloquent as Leonard would have been. Figure out your destination, what that looks like, what it feels like, how you want it to be, and then work the steps back, and then retrace your footsteps, and that's how to...
Well, we want a world where women don't die of breast cancer.
Mm. And are there any other messages or anything that you would like to say to listeners about the campaign?
Well, I would love it if listeners went to bcacampaign.com, and on that they can learn a great deal about breast cancer. They can they can watch a fabulous documentary documentary we've just completed called Unraveling the Pink Ribbon, telling our story of 25 years, telling people what progress has been made, listening to scientists, listening to Evelyn Lauder, listening to ladies who've been through treatment, listening to family members of members who've been through treatment. They can also have a look at how they might be able to help, whether it's by donating, whether it's by using hashtags so that we donate on their behalf. There's a lot of things they can do. It's worth going to the website.
Well, I probably goes without saying, listeners, but all of those links will be in the show notes and you'll be able to click through and watch the documentary and read up on what and everything that Elizabeth has described. But for now, thank you so much.
Thank you
it's
very
been
much,
an absolute
Emma.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much indeed. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to that special episode of The Emma Gunn Show featuring Elizabeth Hurley talking about her work in the breast cancer campaign. All of the links to everything that we discussed are in the show notes on iTunes and at emmaguns.com. But for now, thank you once again and see you in the next episode.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.